Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Game Art Talk podcast. My guest today is A.E. Sanchez, who's currently a lead artist at Machine Games. Hey there.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was kind of a long run to get here, right? Some back and forth. We both have busy lives. So, how's it going? How's life?
All good, man. All good over here in Sweden now. Finally, spring coming.
Oh, yeah.
After the very long, I don't know. You're in Germany, right?
I live in Germany. Yeah.
Is the winter as harsh as in Sweden?
Or? Yeah. No, it's not that harsh. It's more like gray and gray in April. Like,
Stuff
to come out. Yeah. I was in Uppsala 1 year ago.
Really?
I was in Stockholm with my girlfriend, and I told her, hey, there is a cool game studio in Uppsala, and the city looks kind of nice.
Yeah.
Let's go there. And we also went into the I was standing right in front of the office of Machine Games, but it was like after New Year's Eve, and I think nobody was in there. So
yeah, probably not.
Yeah,
it's quite funny actually when people come around for interviews and stuff like that. Uh-huh. Don't know, like actually Machine Games is on top of a mall,
shopping center.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah. It's very convenient, especially for the winter. So, like, if you need to buy something from the grocery shop or the supermarket, you can go downstairs and get it. So it's quite nice.
Yeah.
That's weird, but nice. Yeah.
Yeah. When you go to the elevator, there's like supermarket, and then there is Machine Games above it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Game development and supermarkets.
Yeah. All right. So maybe give us a short introduction. Like, how old are you? Where are you from? Where have you been working? How did this like all start out in the games industry?
Well, as you say, my name is A.E. Sanchez. I'm originally from Spain, so my family comes from the Canary Island, and I live a big chunk of my life in Spain. And then I move around as well. I lived in Portugal, I lived in the UK, and then Sweden as well. I'm 37 at the moment. And I've been working in games for like, I don't know, like 13 years now. It must be around that. I started back in Spain because I come from like a background of journalism. I went to university to actually study journalism. And I spent a lot of time, like I spent like 6 years studying. I never finished my degree. But, you know, like one thing led me to the other. And I ended up like doing motion graphics for like TV channels. And then, you know, there was a particular moment where I actually had to create something. It was like a box rotating, like a crate. And I didn't know any 3D. I was like, maybe it's about time to actually learn this. And then, yeah, I jump into 3D thinking I will do animation, like movies. But I never realized, like, the Castlevania games were made in Spain. So some friends of mine brought over, like, Castlevania, Lords of Shadows. And I saw, like, actually playing, and I was like, fuck, this is really good. And then I learned that these were all people that came from Pyro, which is, like, the old studio that used to do Commandos. And there was a lot of talent in that studio. Yeah, applied, got a job, and then start working in games. That's the beginning.
Okay, so what? So what was your first, video game industry experience? Like, where did this all start? At which company?
It was called Mercury's Team, and it was I joined as a texture artist actually. So I joined as a very specific job, which is something when I was studying, because I did like a 6 month course for like 3D animation and stuff. And like one of the things that I always liked was texturing. It was like the best for me. Once you have done everything, you unwrap and everything, and it's like, okay, let's texture these. Let's make sure that this looks good, you know. And they really liked my portfolio back then. It was like a student portfolio, but like I still think like some stuff was pretty decent for the time. And I got a job and I started working on a 3DS game. It was the Castlevania Mirror of Fate. It wasn't like like AAA or super realistic graphic. It was quite the opposite. It was like a bit cartoonish. And it was very interesting because like all the textures basically were done by two people the whole game. And
crazy.
Yeah. Was it like
complete Photoshop stuff or
did you have
any other tools back then?
Yeah, no. Back then it was like Photoshop.
Okay.
It was only Photoshop. So we were doing everything in Photoshop, like even characters, because we were doing everything. We were doing like props, tileable textures, characters, everything. The only thing we had was the Cinema 4D and Cinema 4D for like fixing the seams. I think that's what we used. And we started using 3D code a little bit as well, because it was quite useful for like having it be more of a like, you know, that sort of look, or like hand painted and stuff. But it was mostly like photo source and then paint over on top. So,
okay. Nice, man. And then, long time ago, huh?
Yeah. I feel like an old man saying this shit. Because after that, I got moved to the AAA quality or AAA game, where that was Castlevania Lords of Shadows 2. And that was all done in Photoshop. But by then, that was the time when like Quixel released Endu and all that. And, you know, even though like it wasn't that much of a game changer, we didn't use it that much. We still used the Photoshop. It was quite weird because at the time, like I don't remember like that many studios that actually had like a fully dedicated like texture department, and the texture department that we had there was like 8 people in total, so it was quite big for what it was. Mm. And again, like our job was doing everything. We were doing mostly like characters, props, and tileable textures. So yeah, it was very interesting.
Nice. How went it on?
I sort of project finish. I got, you know, like my contract finished as well. And I got some freelance work for a little bit. And then I decided that, you know, I always wanted to move, working in games, go somewhere else. So I ended up like applying to Splash Damage in the UK. And I went there to go and work for Gears of War. And yeah, spent like there 2 years working between the Gears of War Ultimate, the remaster, and then like Gears 4 multiplayer, just like doing maps for the multiplayer. That was what Splash Damage was doing back then. But yeah, it was a really good experience. Really like it. And then, you know, like technology kept evolving, actually. That was been Painter, jumping substance. And there was a lot of buzz about it, and I started like messing around with it and still doing everything in Photoshop. So most of the stuff in the Gears is all Photoshop.
Crazy imagine such a big game.
Yeah, but like, I mean, at the end of the day, like simple stuff, if done correctly, you know, it's just more work, really.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people, I remember like when Quixel and Do came out, people were like, oh, this is going to kill texturing. And I was like, nah. I didn't kill it, and jump into Painter is like completely, you know, it's amazing because like the fact that you could paint in a 3D mesh with like all the maps at the same time, and I was like, fuck, this is good.
Yeah, crazy. I don't know, because for me this has always been the standard, you know. I can't think of anything else, which is kind of weird to tell you that, you know.
Yeah,
because that has always been my status quo, right?
Yeah. I mean, when you have it, then you don't think about it, right?
Exactly, but, yeah.
When you don't, and you jump into that, I was like, oh, fuck, this is so good. This is going to make my life so much easier in that way.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then from there, spent like 2 years there, as I said, and then moved to Sweden. And I've been here at Machine Games for like 7 years now. I joined as a... My role has changed as well. So I went from like specialist role to more of a generalist over time. So at the beginning I was like doing textures, and then I was doing textures and props and sets. And then I jumped to actually do like everything from, coming to Machine Games was really quite interesting, because I got to do like level design. I got to do like block out, everything basically, levels fully.
Nice.
Till today, basically. And then I got... keep moving up a little bit, so now lead artist.
Crazy. That's cool. Man, you worked on my favorite gaming franchise, which is the Wolfenstein series. I really, really like the whole look of it. I like the germification of the world. Like, yeah. It's kind of interesting to see what you do with it on a creative basis. It's really, really cool, like the design language and everything. So you kind of went from a senior position to more of a lead position now. So maybe we can speak about that a bit. Are you still doing art, or are you only managing people? Well, like, this is what I think of a lead artist. When I hear lead, it's always like, is he still an artist, or is he like a lead?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doing organization stuff or giving feedback, etc.
Well, that's a really good question. And I think it really depends on the people, and also depends on the size of the project, and depend as well on, you know, like the teams and the company, right? But to answer you shortly, I do art like 50% of my time still. Like, if I wouldn't be able to do that, I wouldn't be interested in a lead position, to be honest. And I know there's a lot of people who say, like, being a lead is, you know, is a different job, which I do agree. You know, it's different skills, it's different way of, it's basically managing a team and making sure that the team works, you know. And lead art is what it does, basically. It's just like making sure, like, all the stuff that is produced, like, has consistency, and also that, you know, like, everybody's work is homogenous in a way, so like everything looks the same and everything mm-hmm. looks like it belongs to the same game in a way,
the same quality.
And then, like, being in between, like, the different departments, because a lead artist, or my role as I do it, is just like basically like being on top of, like, all the 3D departments that are involved in the creation of the game. And sometimes it's not only about, like, the quality of it and, like, providing feedback for, like, how is it going and all that, but, like, it's also about, like, trying to be a bridge between, like, different departments, establish the communication so everything flows in a, you know, in a better way. And it has a little bit of everything, but then at the same time, I get, you know, because of course it's me and I like to do stuff, I get to do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still in love with, like, building you know, worlds and doing environment art and or even props and stuff like that. So
that's cool.
At the end of the day, like, in between meetings, there's days that you have, like, full day to actually work on stuff. Sometimes it's just like providing feedback. Sometimes it's just like doing an asset that somebody needs quickly, or like doing, like, a block out or a layout. You know, that's probably one of the things that I enjoy the most, is like trying to provide, like, other departments help. For example, level design, I think, and that's been not very looked. It's just like, working with level designers, sometimes they don't have, like, like the same spatial vision as, like, artists do when it comes to create, like, the world, the spaces, like, rooms, architecture, whatever it is. And sometimes it's good to provide them with, like, oh, you know, like, visual explorations of the spaces that actually work with gameplay as well. So, yeah.
Making sure everyone is happy and everyone can...
Yeah.
Like, you're kind of streamlining everything to get into the right direction.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's nice. it's a very nice job at the end of the day, because it's, you know, it's helping other people and it's making sure that, like, the overall vision of the game goes somewhere. Not from an art direction perspective, because we have an art director and we have a creative director for that. So they establish, like, the pillars of, like, what the game is about and, like, how it should look visually. Well, when it comes to the execution, you know, that's where we actually do the job. So
nice. Yeah. So where do you then balance of, like, leading and managing a team, or and then giving them the creational freedom to kind of breathe the creativity that the team needs? So how do you balance that in the right way?
Well, for me, it's very easy, because, like, so I come from Spain. Like, in Spain, the culture, the work culture is something that I'm not particularly a fan of. Like, things have changed now, of course. It's been almost 10 years since I don't work in Spain, but like, it comes from the perspective of like being very micromanagement, you know, like just like telling people exactly what they need to do. And over time and over experience as well, like different studios and different countries, like each country has its own kind of, or each studio even has its own kind of way of doing things. And they end up here where like it is quite the opposite. It's micromanagement. It's more about like, you know, we need to make sure that the things are done, but like how you do it, it's up to you. And I like to, you know, approach it that way. I like to make sure that people have the tools. Like when it comes to like, I don't know, software or methodologies or whatever, I don't care. I mean, that's not the important thing here. The important thing is like you produce stuff that is good, looks good, and works in the game. So yeah, I'm trying to give as much freedom to people as possible, honestly.
Yeah, and also I think you are in charge of the people that are work for you, so I think you give them the right you have trust in your artists, I would say, right?
Yes, exactly.
They wouldn't work there.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think like when you build this team of people who are self-driven, who have like a lot of, you know, very, very proactive members of the team, that you need to do anything really. It's people are motivated. You know, I always say the same thing about like when someone moans, for example, about like, oh, I got the worst level to work on. It's like, there's not, you know, good and bad levels. It's what you made out of that level, mm-hmm. how you could turn it into something that is interesting, or how you can focus yourself into elements that, you know, you never done before, and you know, you might find interesting, because doing the same thing again and again, I think, is very boring in general.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's good to change. Yeah, it's good to change. You know, and this is not only for like let's say build the same type of environments, but like skills as well. I think, in my opinion, like someone who's, you know, like very proactive and always looking at different softwares and trying to learn stuff, you know, they're always going to be more motivated to keep going. While if you keep doing the same thing again and again, you're going to get like, oh yeah, the same, you know?
Yeah. And you always get then more, you get more flexible artists that are capable of dealing with problems that come along the way, because...
Exactly.
Always throwing yourself into that position of like, yeah, trying out new things, maybe have another perspective of a problem. You kind of become a good problem solver, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, problem solving to me is just like, environment artists are problem solvers. When it comes to everything, when it comes to like how to interpret like a concept art and put it into like something that is in the game, scales, like how to... you know, solve the problems that gameplay has sometimes, come up with solutions for that, or like performance as well, or workflows as well. Yeah. So definitely environment art, I think it's all about like problem solving.
Yeah, because creating environment art, especially for video games that are really dependent on performance, they create a lot of problems, right?
They do,
They need to look cool, but also they need to run smoothly. So This is already the biggest problem, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's so depending as well on the technology sometimes. It's like changing engines, for example. Like, I think like some methodologies are completely useless in other engines. And like, I have experienced that when like people come from other studios and they want to do things in a particular way. And sometimes it works because the engine supports that sort of way of doing it. But some of the times it doesn't, you know. So it's very tricky to have that balance of like adapting, because that's the other thing. Like, you move studios, you change engines, and you need to adapt, and you need to adapt not only to the technology, but like the way that studio does games, which is, you know, another completely different discussion. But
yeah, do you have your own engine, or are you using an external one like Unreal or something?
Machine Games uses id Tech, which is like the id original engine, and we share it with id, so they work with it for Doom, and we do the games that we do with it.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, before our recording, we spoke about social media, art portfolio sites like ArtStation, for example. And you also said you want to get away from those pages, maybe create an external website on your own. So how do you feel about this centralized art pages like ArtStation, for example? Are they still mandatory?
Well, I don't know if I am the one to answer that question. I have my opinions about it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I want to hear them.
I think the way things are going, one of the things that I've been seeing more and more is there's definitely nowadays more things in less hands, and companies and keep growing and buying and accumulating. Mm. And to me, for example, if we talk about our station, it was very weird that it got bought, and then it was basically a hub of people trying to do and show art at the end of the day, and it was in private hands for sure, but it wasn't in interested private hands, let's say, and for me it's just there's been a lot of very vague decisions that were not made with multiple things that have been happening, from the war to the AI stuff, and it's all getting into a very dramatic territory sometimes, where I don't believe in intentions if they're not real. And for me, the most real thing to do is just abandon it, stop giving money to something that you don't believe in. And it's a bit of a shame, because as I said, I've been very active on ArtStation. I think ArtStation was really, really good, and I think to a certain degree it still holds well.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it's more about that's one thing. But if you think about it, on the other hand, and how you're exposed to social media, and how the internet is a completely different place nowadays. I think everything is very corporative, and everything is very social media orientated, and I wonder if with the things that we do, and of course it's very nice to actually show your art and show what you do, but it's weird. It's I don't know if you remember when everybody was using Pinterest for references.
Oh yeah.
And then everybody moved to PureRef.
Oh yeah.
So we went from everything is online to everything is in my computer again, And I always found that transition super weird, but it makes sense. And I feel the same nowadays with social media. I think there's so much, it's such a waste of time, and especially it requires so much energy and being active or passive, because that's the other thing with social media. I think social media, for most people, it's a passive thing. It's the infinite scroll. Mm. Yeah, exactly. And it's if you're not being active on it, what is the point?
What is the point, or where's the benefit?
Yeah, where's the benefit? You're just wasting time of your life that you could be, spending with your family, or you could be doing something else. It doesn't matter what it is, even modeling. You could be doing other things instead of browsing Facebook or Instagram or even ArtStation. It's just nothing. I think we're living in a time where we have seen it. Everything already, exactly, I don't know how you feel about it, and everything kind of merges into one thing. ArtStation is a really good example of that, of the same type of hard surface, or the same type of textures, or the same type of cartoonish Unreal Engine scenes,
yeah.
So everything is kind of, in a way, it's good, but in a way, it's very good to be away from that as well. And to be fair, I don't, I have a lot of friends who, at the beginning, they were joking about it. It's oh yeah, let's see how you deal with that. And I think it's a very positive, for me, it's been super positive overall.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, it makes complete sense. But if someone had told me 1 year ago, maybe you should delete your ArtStation, I was like, what? This is like this is like how I get jobs at the moment. Like I sent them my ArtStation portfolio because yeah, there is my stuff. There the people can see what I'm capable of. But
I think yeah. It still makes sense for, like, let's say freelancers. We were talking about these. Mm-hmm. I got this friend that we have a Spanish podcast about it. And a friend of mine, he's a freelance concept artist, and like all the attention that he gets to get new jobs, it's through the ArtStation. Mm-hmm. And it makes total sense in that regard. Or the same with students, for example. Like, students need to be in a place where, like, you know, like they can showcase their art so they can actually access, even though, like, and I can speak for Sweden right now because how it works here. But like, at least in Sweden, like the schools do like events basically where they invite like all the studios to go around and check the performance. Yeah. So like you just like literally go and be like, okay, this person are interesting. Let's do it like an interview. So there's all the ways to actually do it. And it doesn't mean like you need to be in centralized. I mean, to begin with, because like you don't own those images anymore in a way, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's not yours, like.
Now.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can always, like, even if you're a student or if you are like whatever, like the best way always to get a job is to apply directly for the job. You know, you send it and you know have quality portfolio. But you can have it on your own. You know, you can have it on Google Drive. You can have it on your own web page. Like the medium doesn't matter. Like what matters is the content, I think. So.
Yeah, ArtStation is just an easy, cheap way, right?
You need
to build a website, you just upload your images, and it kind of looks like a portfolio, right?
Yeah, I think it's great. Like, the way they put it together, and the way that, you know, they manage to the switch between portfolio and regular page immediately without, like, having to do that many things. It was great. Mm-hmm. I think it's really, really well designed. And everybody is used to it as well. So, yeah, it's a good standard. And don't get me wrong, I think ArtStation did a lot of things right. But for me, it's other reasons. It's not its functionality. And, of course, I understand as well. I come from, like, a privileged perspective now that I have a job, that I've been working in the industry for a very long time.
Yeah.
So in that regard, for me right now, it's not a need to have it, you know.
Yeah.
But you know,
yeah, you kind of have the history, you know.
Yes, exactly.
It's lead artist at Machine Games. That's what else do I need to say, right? When applying for a job.
I mean, that applies to everywhere. Like, I always had the same thing with like students or like people who are juniors who start like working in studios that are like, you know, very early days, or like, you know, studios that they don't feel like they're doing great. But I always recommend the same. It's like, do a good job, because if you do a good job, I always like to bring up the Orb, Mikael Vicente, example, because he was working for a studio in France that, well, most people didn't know about a game that most people didn't know about. But he came up with this fucking super sweet way of sculpting everything, you know, because he was investing in his own style and his own methodologies and his look, you know, and that shit becomes like so trendy, like went to Blizzard and you know, yeah. At the end of the day, it's like, it doesn't matter where you come from. If you do a good job, if you like read and consume like interesting things, not only ArtStation. That's the other thing. I feel ArtStation can be very, very bad. It's like, if you consume the same again and again, like, you know,
exactly. Yeah,
how's that going to help you?
The 150th AK-47.
Exactly.
Yeah, then you kind of adopt this. I don't know, this look maybe, or you don't get other perspectives on how to create a weapon maybe.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's I don't think it's black or white. I think there's like so many different tones of gray to pick up from, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So how do you like you currently are building a website then. Is there some advice maybe for artists or maybe also for students who are planning to build a website, what to include?
Well, I've been looking into the different options right now at the market. Mm-hmm. And I mean, most of them, I think one of the good thing about like, you know, websites that you pay, it's like they have everything. You can build yourself a blog, you can build yourself a shop, you can build anything, you know. When it comes to advice, I always say the same thing, especially for students, is like you don't need that much content for a good portfolio. I think like for someone who is starting and wants to land a job in a good studio, they need to focus on quality. And quality sometimes is about like being smart, like scoping the projects that you do. And of course, like being, you know, self-critical in terms of like, what is the quality that I can provide? When it comes to like the content itself, I think like 2 or 3 projects is more than enough. I don't think you need more than that to like make someone say like, oh, this person is really good. Like, let's try to hire them or whatever. So focus on quality. Just do like 2 or 3 projects. Like if you're working on 3D props, then make sure you do like something complicated, you know, like something that is mechanical, something that is organic, something that is, you know, like you have a wide range of skills. Mm-hmm. And always try to make sure that, you know, texturing skills are good, or, you know, like presentation as well. Like a lot of people underestimate like presenting their work, and presenting is like sometimes, you know, like almost like a third of the whole thing.
Exactly, yeah. Like
takes time.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time.
I can give you a number there so people get it. When I've been like doing like portfolio screenshots for my own on Wolfenstein games, I usually take like a full week, I'm not joking, to just go around and making sure that everything is presentable. I end up with, like last time it was like 1,000 screenshots. And I was like, it was like, I need to reduce this, because then again, like, I think like too many images is bad as well. People get, people get bored eventually. There's 2 things that I'm not a huge fan of. It's like super huge portfolios. And then, because like super long portfolios, like you're going to keep scrolling forever. And like everything is going to be, especially if you repeat like the same room from different angle or what, stuff like that. And having the, for example, breakdowns, I think is very necessary, like showing what you've done and how you've done it. And, you know, like I really like, or really appreciate like when I see like textures being, you know, like step by step, for example. Things that give you an understanding of that person knows how to texture something, how to layer something up in order to make it believable. And then the other thing I don't like is when people do art dumps as well, when they keep releasing every week one thing, you know. I think it fails to gain your attention, you know. If you do it all at once and it's like, shit, it's like a feast almost. You go and you see it all and it's like, oh, this is amazing. I really like how you did this. But if you want me to keep, and I think this is very, very kind of like LinkedIn mentality of like constantly keeping, you know, like the attention and that. That is something that I feel is very exhausting from social media. It's just like people just like self-selling themselves without a need.
All the time,
Because honestly, what is the need? When you're working in a studio, like you know, you have a good job, you have a good portfolio, you have a good CV. Why do keep doing this, you know, again and again and again and again? In that way, in like constantly selling ourselves, constantly, you know. It's good to have your own brand or your own name and people to know you and all that. But what is the limit? Every week releasing something? You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's kind of how the whole industry, like as an artist, maybe changed a bit. Everyone thinks now this needs to be like, this needs to be handled like an influencer, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Posting content all the time, getting the attention, getting the likes, getting the follows, getting all the visibility from the industry. And yeah, maybe this is also an ego thing. I don't know.
It could be.
Because like I'm sitting at my PC 12 hours a day. Nobody's like telling me in real life, you did a good job. You know, this is kind of weird sometimes because you just read the message, cool textures. I don't know. Maybe this is something we seek as an artist because sometimes it can be a bit lonely.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, especially if you're a freelancer. Yeah, that could be the case. But I just question, like, it's. I mean, I'm mostly talking from working in studio where like you have people around you, and you know, like you get feedback from your leads and you get feedback from whoever, right? But like I also question, like, for example, like likes, and I also question like comments that don't add anything, you know. It feels like ArtStation, for example, is a place for like, it's not a place for feedback because like job is done pretty much. It's not like Polycan where people were posting like their
ribs.
Exactly, or Discord. I think Discord is way more positive in the way I'm involved in a couple of, I'm not involved, but like I've been active in a couple of, you know, communities in Discord. And I think it's a nicer way to like provide feedback, to be, you know, positive, to help someone, you know, to grow, to develop their skills. Because like I see it constantly, and I'm a victim myself, or I've been a victim myself of that, of, oh, super nice, very nice job. It's like, what am I adding with that comment? You know,
exactly.
Yeah. What am I saying here? That I like your job? You already know I like your job. I gave you a like, you know. But like, I'm not adding anything, and there is no like. I tried a couple of times adding feedback to the comments, but like when the job is done, like most people don't want to, you know, like redo.
They don't want to. They are so happy that they posted it or like get it finished, and then it gets destroyed again with a 100 of lines of feedback.
Brutal feedback. Like,
oh my God, boy, I need to rework everything. Nobody does that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Imagine like that. Brutal ArtStation. Where like you post your work and then people will destroy it.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you still like doing personal stuff? Like, do you still find the time?
Oh, yeah. I'm still doing, I'm trying to focus on other things at the moment. Not so much about, you know, like, digital stuff in terms of you know, like creating assets and stuff like that, but I'm modeling quite a lot for 3D printing. So like try to do some other things that are not directly related to what I do every day, because you know, like I like to sketch stuff. I do sketch a lot of things at home, like especially super art sketches. That's something that I really, really like, because I'm quite quick with it, and then I can come up with an idea. And when I'm getting to the point where, like, after 2-3 days, well, I'm bored of the concept itself already. You know, like my whole thing was like try to explore a shape, or try to explore like how to do this. You know, I'm not fully interested in going through the full execution, because like I have my job for that and I spend there like 40 hours a week, so there's not much motivation for me to actually finish things at home, but you know, learn from the process, which is great. But with 3D printing, that is you need to finish the process. Currently, for example, I've been doing a lot of, and this is very weird, right, but I've been buying like Hot Wheels.
Little toy cars,
right? Yeah, the toy cars, yeah. And just modeling parts to like modify them and do like post-apocalyptic cars instead. Nice. So basically building stuff that then you print, but like you realize then like there's other things to keep in mind when it comes to scales, for example, when you print things that are so little. And then you have to be, you know, more chunky, and I don't know. It adds on things. And then when you print it, like as well, that is something when you do like digital art, I don't think you you realize, but when you print something that you have done, you have created with your own like fucking software or whatever, you know, it's completely different thing. Like the physicality of it, having it in your hands. Hold it. Mm. Yeah, exactly. Mm.
Touch like, it.
Well, I did this.
I did that.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Okay, so is there any benefit from it, or are you kind of looking for something in that, or just doing that for fun? Like,
I'm doing it for fun. Okay, I'm just doing it for fun. Like,
so is there any takeaway? Like, is there something you wouldn't have thought before doing that? Like, is there something new thing you kind of discovered?
Being practical, yeah. Sometimes, especially with the work where we do in games, it's very, you know, either long or, you know, it takes forever and it needs to be super good quality. For example, with like stuff like 28 millimeters miniatures, you need to be very practical because like most of the detail is not going to be seen. So like you have to focus on what it's important, like hierarchies. And that is the best part, in my opinion, because like then you don't worry too much about like doing too many details that are not going to be seen, but you focus on shapes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just focus on that, on shapes and readability of shapes and stuff like that.
Nice, cool. All right, what, like when you take a look at let's go back to the portfolio maybe a bit. If you take a look at a portfolio, what are the things that you are first looking at? Like, is there something that's really, really important for you? You already mentioned like having a bit of a variability and different kind of props. Is there something else you would add to it?
Well, yeah, I mean, as I said before, like not too many things, breakdowns, an understanding, like when someone checks your portfolio, you need to make sure that you're aiming for the right thing as well, in terms of like, oh, I want to be an environment artist, so I'm going to see environments. I'm not going to see a concept of a cat and then like a character and then like her surface model of a wheel, you know. It's like, what do you want to do? Like, if you apply for a job, just make sure that your portfolio reflects that. And to me, like, the portfolio is only a small part of it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, so especially when you're a junior, when you want to get like an internship or whatever, the portfolio is just like it's just to catch the attention of like a potential new employer. Important thing for me, it's what comes after it, because like the portfolio, you can comment on it and be like, okay, I like this work, I like how you do it, but maybe like you're gonna get a couple of questions out of your portfolio, and like some of them everybody knows. What are they gonna be like? What will you change now? Or can I give you feedback on these?
The classic question.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like it's so overused, it's so fucking cliche in a way, that it makes sense that, you know, like the questions are focused on other things that are not portfolio related. So what I mean is, like, I think there's a lot of things that are related to an interview that are more important than a portfolio. Portfolio is just like, yeah, your presentation card. Here I am. This is my name. This is what I do. I would like to work with you. But when it comes to the interview, that process is, you know, as important or even more than the portfolio, I would say. Because that's when, you know, that's when you know the person. That's when you put, yeah,
the
like...
character.
Yeah, exactly. The character and... And that's when the studio can tell, like, if they want to work with this person, like, if this person is someone that could fit into the team and it could fit into the mentality as well, you know, because not everybody feels or thinks the same way or works the same way. So it's crucial to be very, you know, very specific as an interviewer, you know, like, about, like, what you want to check from that candidate particularly. But yeah, I think people need definitely to put some effort into like how they communicate themselves, like how they, especially if you're young and just like out of school, and you know, this is a job and it might be a job or not, you know, it really depends on how you behave, how you present yourself, like all that.
Yeah, like skills like critical thinking, how you
yeah,
how you kind of see your own work, like self-evaluation and stuff.
Yeah, honestly, the most important, at least this is my opinion, but like the most important skill for me, it's well, two more important: communication, one, and then you know, self-criticism. I think self-criticism, like if you have it in you, it's the tool that will enable you to progress, you know.
Yeah.
Like even if you're a student, if you're self-critical, if you can evaluate your work, put it with, you know, next to studio work or portfolio and be like, what is missing? That is the thing that's going to drive you forward and like going to make you better. And but that is very difficult to acquire. Like some people have it naturally, some people can train them. But yeah, those two.
It's so funny to like think about it, because at the, like when I started out 6 years ago, the whole industry was telling you learn your hard skills, have a good portfolio is key, you don't need anything, any qualification, portfolio. And now we speak about like things that you can't just learn. Like you can learn them, but need to kind of develop them in a way that you can't develop a portfolio, right?
Yeah.
You kind of, this is more kind of really philosophical, like critical thinking. Like you, this is always good in life, not just for a like hard surface artist position at a games company. This is also good for relationships,
It's a survival skill.
Exactly. Like what can I do better, or where did I do something wrong? And
How
did you learn that? Like maybe we can speak about that. How did you become a critical thinker?
Well, I wouldn't say becoming a critical thinker, but like
but how did you learn the skill? Like,
well, I think especially there's multiple things that I think are related there, like your family education, your interest as a, you know, as a teenager, or as a, you know, what you have seen or watch, or like all sort of like culture inference that you can get. But then again, like your friendships and everything. But when it comes to self-evaluation, which is critical sense is one thing, and self-evaluation might be a completely different one. I can give you a concrete answer to you, which is like, it's funny, but I was a teenager. I was like 16 years old, and I was trying to learn Photoshop. And I was like checking tutorials. I'm like, oh, how do I do this? It was back in the day when like forums were quite a thing, and everybody wanted to have their own like signature, like personalized signature. And I was like, okay, this might be like the best way to actually learn Photoshop, if I do like free signatures for forums I was in. And so I started like doing that. And then people were starting like say, oh, I like this, you know, and you kind of develop like a sense of like what people think is good and what people think is not good. And then you see what other people were doing at the same time. And you were comparing yourself, and it's like, how can I create something new? How can I bring something new to the table? And it's as silly as like creating signatures for like a forum. But that was the first time when I was aware of like, you know, I might actually have a skill for this. I might actually be able, I might actually have something in my skill set that kind of makes me feel that I could do a living out of that. So it's the same with when I started like messing around with motion graphics. It was the same. It's just like checking some tutorials, and then I did a couple of tests, and with that, I presented it, and I was like, oh, you want to do the whole TV channel, you know, like motion graphics? And I was like, oh, wow. You know, that's a bit more than I thought it would be. But, you know, if you have initiative, and if you have like trained eye in terms of like looking around you and see what's good and what's not, that is the most important thing. I don't know. It's a skill that is, I would say, is 50-50. Like you can have some of it, and then also you can learn a lot of it. So
yeah, it's always the right balance, because sometimes you can be overthinking. Like to think of yourself, I'm a failure and everything I touch is wrong. Every application that I send gets refused. Because yeah, on the other side, you need to think of yourself, what am I capable of? Like, what can I do? It's kind of finding the right balance.
And that's a very healthy approach as well. I mean, that's usually the approach that I have. Every time I start something, I have no clue of what I'm going to do, you know, like, or how it's going to turn out at the end. And like, in my opinion, you know, being humble with your feet on the ground, like be like, oh, let's see what happens. And then trust your gut and your intuition and your experience, of course, to go through that, you know, because I mean, I can give you another example of this. Before I came to Machine Games, I had zero experience doing hard surface environments. Zero. Mm-hmm. I literally had no clue how to do them.
Yeah.
But then you come to the studio and you start doing things, because I was always more focused on organic stuff, which it was more of my interest. But then hard surface was like, okay, this is interesting. Oh, Machine Games, I guess I'm going to work on something that is hard surface. And that's exactly what I did since I joined. But then again, it's like, I have no clue. Or level design. I had no experience in level designing. I was like, oh, you need to design the whole path for the player in this part of the level. And that was one of my first tasks. And I was like, okay, I guess I've played a lot of games already. I have a bit of, you know, critical sense of, well, it's good as well if you're able to. And sometimes it's as simple as writing the points down in a list, like bullet points, like putting your thoughts in order, basically. It's like, what is important to do this or to achieve this? And then you have people around you as well. You know, like I think like one of the things that you can learn the most in these senses is like, you're asking people who have experience and who have done this before. And if you ask them, you will learn as well, you know. Surround you with people who are very capable. That is super important, I think. But definitely having the feeling of like, I have no clue of what I'm doing when you start doing something, it's super good, because it always puts you in a position of like, you're going to try your best. I mean, if you come from the perspective of like, I'm going to kill it, you know, like, are you, you know, if you start from zero, like there's always like a room for like getting better. But like, if you think like you're good, then I think you're wrong. So.
Exactly. Yeah. It's always finding a good sweet spot between, yeah, not to underestimate yourself but also like stay humble and know what you need to work on and know what you need to improve.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you mentioned that, I want to make sure that it's clear that you shouldn't underestimate yourself in terms of like selling yourself.
You know?
Maybe sometimes it's a very cultural thing as well. I mean, again, like going back to my own personal thing, I'm from Spain, you know, like we are very humble in general, even though like they're really, really good game artists in Spain, all over the world. I mean, we literally have a podcast about this. So we bring people from all over the world that are working on like top-notch studios. And to make sure that people understand that like, it doesn't matter where you come from, you know, it doesn't matter what language you use or what kind of like mentality you have. You know, you can always be good and you can always be great at doing something if you try hard enough. So, but yeah, don't underestimate yourself, especially not when it comes to salary. And especially when it comes to, you know, like conditions and stuff like that. Because if you're decent, are you going to get whatever you want? So.
Yeah. How would you say to, speaking of salary and, how would you say, what would you tell young students to when going into the games industry? Because for lots of students, they just want to get the job and they want to just get into the industry and they don't care about how much they get paid and they really sell themselves short. How would you say young students should approach this in the interview process maybe?
Yeah, that's a good question actually. I think like to begin with, I mean, I don't think in general, like, money is a good motivation. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I had, like, some really economical, you know, offers to work for, like, this or that. In terms of, like, how much do you want to earn? It's like, no, I'm definitely not interested as much as in money. Of course, like, I like to make money as anyone. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'd rather, like, earn less money and work in something that I like and enjoy my everyday. And I feel like, okay, I could do this for years rather than, like, you know, work on a project that will pay you super well. And then it will become a nightmare in terms of, like, how do you wake up every day to work on that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With students, it's difficult because, like, you don't know what to expect. But, like, I would say the first thing is, like, information, of course. Like, try to make sure that you understand, like, how much they're paying. I think nowadays, like, maybe back in the day, like, things were a bit different. Nowadays, I think you can be very honest and be like, how much you're paying for this position, you know, in the interview. And also, like, do your own, you know, homework and search, like, Glassdoor. There's multiple tools for doing that. Glassdoor is a good example of that. Mm-hmm. And of course, like, if you know someone, like, it's always the best way. If you know someone, or nowadays, like, with Discord, like, you can ask anyone, you know, you can ask people in the industry, but, like, hey, how much should I ask in this studio? Like, how much they're paying in France? How much they're paying in Canada? What's the average? You know, how much do I need to survive? So you can reach out to people to know exactly what you know, what companies are offering. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more about the balance of, like, rather than focusing on the money, make sure you make enough money and you work for a studio that you want to work for. And that is very difficult as well to know. I think that's even more difficult than knowing how much you're going to earn. Because when you know, there's this conception of, like, studios, especially if you're an avid player, like, you play the game and you think, you know, oh, it's going to be great to work on this. Then the reality of development is completely different.
Yeah.
There's studios to play their games, and there are studios to work on their games. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So sometimes that conception gets a bit mixed, and people end up having, like, first experience, like, being completely frustrated and stuff like that. Yeah,
this is really, really big what you're saying. I kind of get the feeling now, having worked on more and more games, I kind of get the feeling of you're really, really excited when you work on your first video games and you're like, oh, yeah. I made it. I made this. And now the more and more I worked on these games, they are just projects. Like, this sounds super stupid, but they just projects, you know, this is just, I do my job. I get paid for it. I create the meshes. I do my best I can do no way around it, but they are projects, you know, they are not this fancy video games that you have your childhood memories with. They are projects. You need to create the stuff that is needed for this video game to succeed.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, it's inevitable to think about work as work after years working. You know, it doesn't matter, like, how long you've been working. It can be one project, it can be two projects, but after a while you realize, like, you're getting paid for doing it. It doesn't mean, like, you don't need to enjoy it. You need to enjoy it. That's what I'm saying. And in enjoying, like, money is not always, like, the, you know, the key for, like, enjoying the project, I would say.
True. Yeah.
I think there's, for me, like, the two more important things about, like, working in a place is the team, who I'm going to be working, who I'm going to be sharing the experience with. And this is something that if you're new, you know, or you don't know the studio, it's very difficult to understand. But when you're inside a studio and you work with the same people for multiple projects and, you know, like, you work very well with them, that is something that you end up appreciating. It's like, this is what I like. I like working here because, like, the team and the people who work here. And that is, for me, very valuable when it comes to appreciating a job or, you know, like, a role in a studio.
Yeah.
Which is not always, like, said, but I think it's crucial. You know, like, you have a healthy positive and people who are willing to give their best in order to do a good job. Because if you land up like in a studio like that, you're gonna learn a lot. You're gonna learn, you know, like everything when it comes to like technical stuff, when it comes to like artistic values, when it comes to, you know, so many things. And then the other thing I do think is crucial. It's art direction, you know.
Yeah.
Being involved. I mean, I'm very interested in like the art aspect of making games and how games can differentiate themselves from others. You know, there's a reason why you like Wolfenstein, because mm-hmm. it's very unique. I don't think anyone else is doing this sort of stuff apart from like maybe a couple of other games. But you see Wolfenstein, you know it's Wolfenstein. And that's exactly one of the reasons why I came here. It's like, I really like what you guys do, so I want to work for you, you know? Of course, playing the game as well. But art direction, to me, is crucial, because like, there's so many studios nowadays that are doing generic stuff that when you end up like in a studio that, you know, like do something that is very iconic, that it has like a vision, that is very difficult to find. And those studios, in my opinion, are the best studios always.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Gears of War is another good example of that. You don't even realize like how iconic Gears of War is until you, or maybe you have played it, but like when you work on a Gears of War game, it's like, yeah, this is, I mean, like what Epic created back then was amazing, like visionary for its time. So
yeah, that's true. All right. Thank you so much for taking the time. I think you gave a great insight of what being a lead artist at Machine Games is. And also we spoke about social media as a whole and maybe some good tips how to see yourself as an artist and present yourself in the in the wide spaces of internet without maybe ArtStation or this art centralized pages. So thank you so much for your time. And I will also link your portfolio, but your podcast.
I can put it around. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in Spanish, though. That's the only thing.
All my Spanish people out there, feel free to check it out.
I'm pretty sure there must be some.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Want to say thank you for the invitation as well. And again, these are my opinions. They don't mean that they're right.
They are your own and you can keep them. thank you so much. It was a fantastic talk. I really enjoyed it. I hope we speak soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.